Please be seated. I have loved many movies, and one of my favorites is You've Got Mail. And it wasn't just because of that sweet, strong Meg Ryan. It was also because the movie was an ode to fall and the beginning of the school year. Remember Tom Hanks writing, "Don't you love New York in the fall? It makes me want to buy school supplies. I would send you a bouquet of newly sharpened pencils if I knew your name and address." I've always loved the beginning of school, and especially new school supplies. But there was a time in my life when new school supplies weren't readily available to us. Money was very tight. But it was okay because my grandfather was a school janitor. So there were always slightly scratched pencil boxes and partly used spiral notebooks. But I have to say, they didn't speak to me the way new school supplies did. And it wasn't until much later, when I realized that some kids didn't even have the slightly scratched pencil boxes or the mostly used spiral notebooks. And that's why I am so full of gratitude that each year the deacons sponsor the Back to School Supply Drive and that you overwhelmingly and generously respond by bringing those new school supplies to kids who really deserve and need a fresh start and a good school year. I've always loved fall and back to school. Now, you won't be surprised to learn that it wasn't because of the school lunches. Though, there was a time in my first couple of years of teaching when I was living alone and fresh out of college and didn't know how to cook much and didn't want to spend time doing it, when the school lunches were the best food I had all week long. Living in the heart of North Carolina, teaching in the public schools, school lunches were often fried chicken or steak with gravy or fried okra or fried squash or fried anything. It didn't occur to me till much later that some kids didn't have the luxury of complaining about a school lunch. Several years ago, I read an article in the local section of our newspaper and learned that 90% of the kids in our neighborhood were living at or below the poverty line. Out of that knowledge and amazing volunteers, we've created the Brown Bag Project, feeding hundreds of school children and dozens of families. I guess one of the reasons I've always loved school and the beginning of school is that I've always fit in at school, public schools for me. For all the ways they struggle, I think public schools are wonderful. In a lot of ways, they are wonderful. Schools have always been my community. I even loved high school. Yes, there was teasing and late nights and studying and plenty of homework and a few disagreements, but there were also my teammates, my coaches whom I idolized, and plenty of teachers who were willing to treat me like the adult I was ready to be. I am a champion of public schools, have always been a champion of public schools. And then along came my son. Getting my son through public school was like, not like trying to put a square peg in a round hole, but like trying to put a cube, a 3D spiraling full of light, huge volume cube into a little round hole. He didn't just find it hard. He suffered. And how I wished there was a simple or at least a clear fix for him. An obvious fix like brown bag lunches for hungry school children or school supplies for kids without. What he needed, though, was not in the public schools. What he needed was something like the synagogue that you heard about this morning, the the synagogue not as it existed, but as it was intended back in Jesus' day. The synagogue as it was intended was to be the center of the community. Originally, that word synagogue referred to all the people who were gathered together. But over time, the synagogue began to be known as the building that housed the people. The same thing happened with churches. Church used to mean the people who were gathered together in community, and somehow church became the building that the community was gathered in. And like the synagogue, something else changed in the churches. The churches, which had begun as assemblies of people alive, breathing, dreaming, evolving, became as rigid as the buildings they were housed in. In spite of a later emphasis on prayer and study in the assembly, the main reason for the Jewish gathering was to be community. The synagogue was school, meeting place, place of prayer, courtroom. In some towns, the synagogue is where they put up the local travelers. It was a synagogue where groups of Jewish students assembled for reading and discussion. This meant that worship and study and friendship and community celebration were all done by the same people in the same place. All of it. Church, school, family, friends, socializing, all of it in the same place. People in the synagogue were teachers. They were learners. They were neighbors. But here's what happened, according to the scripture that we read this morning. The people got so caught up in their worship that they forgot they were supposed to be community first. The people of God assembled together first, a place for healing and reconciliation first. So when this man with the withered hand showed up that day, Jesus asked the people if it would be lawful to heal him, to do good on the Sabbath. Now, this wasn't just a cosmetic thing. This withered hand probably meant the man was not employable. He wouldn't have had physical therapy or accommodations or any of the things we take for granted. He likely was relegated to women's chores, maybe even begging. Add to that that the people of this time believed all illness or anything that made a person vulnerable, like blindness or deafness, resulted from sin. Sin of the person or even of the person's parents. So the people gathered at the synagogue would have had all kinds of prejudice against this man with the withered hand, and Jesus asked them point blank, is it okay to heal this man? Is it okay to do good works on the Sabbath in the synagogue? And they didn't even have the guts to answer. So they stood silent. And like Alyssa said, Jesus was filled with anger and he was also sad. And he asked the man to stretch out his hand, and Jesus restored the hand, which means he restored the man. You know, when Jesus healed a blind man, it wasn't because blindness was undesirable or inferior. It was to restore the man to community. When Jesus healed a deaf man or caused the woman who was hemorrhaging to stop bleeding or allowed the lame man to walk, it was not about conditions that were undesirable or inferior. It was about restoring these people to the community. It was what the synagogue was supposed to be about. It was what the church is supposed to be about. I'm going to read some words to you from the book of Isaiah, and the translation, the interpretation I'm using is from the Message. Now, the Message doesn't shy away from anything, and this is one area where it really hits hard. But this is what Isaiah said to the people. Isaiah said, here's what God thinks about your synagogues and your churches. I can't stand your trivial religious games. Monthly conferences, weekly Sabbaths, special meetings, 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 meetings. I can't stand anymore. Meetings for this, meetings for that. I hate them. You've worn me out. I'm sick of your religion, religion, religion. When you go right on acting badly. When you put on your next prayer performance, I'll be looking the other way. No matter how long or loud or often you pray, I won't be listening. And do you know why? Because you've been tearing people to pieces and your hands are dirty. Go home and wash up, clean up your act, sweep your lives clean of your evil doings so I don't have to look at them any longer. Say no to law, to wrong. Learn to do good. Work for justice, help the down and out, stand up for the homeless, go to bat for the defenseless. That's what a synagogue could be. A place where we work for justice. That's what a church can be. A place where we help the down and out, stand up for the homeless, go to bat for the defenseless. I thank God that my son did find a community like that, one where he fit. The One Heart School that met in our sanctuary, in that way that God has of taking care of us, the founder of the One Heart School had signed a contract with us in January to begin leasing our space in June, months before we knew our son was going to need an alternative school. It was the spring of that year when my son's experience reached a critical point. Most of you know that the One Heart School decided to move farther north and ended their lease with us in June. I was sorry to see them go. Each day, I had the privilege of seeing kids who didn't quite fit, some who had learning disabilities, some who had body issues, some who had kid stuff. It was a privilege to see them growing together, becoming a community, becoming lifelong friends. The school also invested in us. They added woodwork and playscapes and security fencing, and as part of their daily schedule, the students mopped and dusted and cleaned the kitchen and cleaned the bathrooms. What's not to love? I was also sorry to see One Heart go because we could use the rent money. We don't need it to pay our regular bills, but we need it to finish the shower truck and expand Brown Bag and to support our unsheltered neighbors in bigger ways and other outreach initiatives. We need it for the thousands and thousands of dollars of anticipated and unanticipated maintenance and repairs needed on a multi-building 10-acre campus. But I started thinking about it, about replacing those renters, and it became very clear to me, I didn't get in this to be a landlord. And I remembered what I always say in new member classes, there are plenty of churches, too many churches if we're being honest. If we're not going to do good in the world, good in the community, we don't need to be here. And my vision for MCC Austin is simply this. Whenever anything good happens in the community, whenever anything good happens in Austin, I want people to assume that we are part of it. And that changed my thinking. That changed my thinking from what do we need to what does the world need? And the moment I began to ask that question, God began to provide answers. What does the world need that we, the church, are not already providing? What does Austin need that we are not already providing? What does the world need beyond a Christian community with an intentional outreach to LGBTQ people? What does the world need? What does Austin need beyond food equity, beyond support for the unsheltered, beyond sanctuary for refugees? And the moment I began to ask, God, began to provide answers. What does the world need? I asked. Deborah Drummond, through years of commitment to making MCC Austin a welcoming church for deaf people, had raised my awareness, patiently taught me, and advocated constantly for the deaf community. So much so that when Karen Brown explained to me that the world needs more opportunities for deaf children and their families, that information didn't just land and blow away. It took root. What does the world need? What does Austin need? We need to find our common humanity, our moral courage, our spiritual path. We need to stop hating each other, stop shouting at each other, stop trying to change each other while we forfeit responsibility for changing ourselves. We need to be kind and thoughtful to each other, shine our light for each other, hold hope for each other. When Maggie Tate said she knew a way to foster that kind of being in the world, the information didn't just land and blow away, it took root. What does the world need? It needs to be a safe place for LGBTQ kids, especially transgender and queer kids. Do you know any transgender or queer kids? Have you ever rushed home from a movie because they couldn't go to the bathroom safely in a public place? Ever been heartsick when states like Texas try to push cruel bathroom bills with no shred of evidence to support the legislation and no shred of decency when it comes to the lives of these children? I have. And that information took root too. And we began to connect. And we began to create. Cormac Russell said, a community can never own that which was created for them in the same way that they own that which they create for themselves. That process of creation is an inside-out one, and it is contingent on discovering and connecting gifts, capacities, and resources. And our connecting and creating is now at the point that we can announce it to you. MCC Austin is creating a language and learning community, a school. The Chrysalis Language and Learning Community will be a separate 501c3 under the direction of MCC Austin. The Anchor Program will be a daycare preschool for deaf infants age 0 to 4 and their siblings and hearing children as well. The children will be with us in the mornings, and then in the evenings, we will offer activities and opportunities for parents and families. Many deaf children are born into hearing families, families that do not sign, that have no connections to the deaf community, and that aren't aware of the support opportunities that exist. It's not unusual for hearing parents not to understand or even to know the extent of their child's deafness. And so it is not unusual for parents, loving, involved, attentive, devoted parents, not to be introducing language skills to their deaf infants until they are 1 or 2 or even 3 years old. Can you understand how socially and educationally behind a child is by that time? The Chrysalis community will be there for them. The second piece of the Chrysalis Language and Learning Community will be a variety of programs and opportunities for the community at large. Think growth groups, unleashed. Everything from ASL classes to art, sewing, dancing, gardening, yoga. If people want it, we will find a way to offer it. But within this piece, we will be building our community based on the principles of nonviolent communication, NVC. One of my favorite quotes comes from Trappist monk Thomas Merton. He says, as long as we're on the earth, The love that unites us will bring us suffering by our very contact with one another. Because this love is the resetting of a body of broken bones. There are two things people can do, he says, about the pain of disunion with other people. They can love or they can hate. Nonviolent communication, which was developed by Marshall Rosenberg, guides us to reframe how we communicate with others. It teaches us how to be community together without shame, without blame, without guilt, without any of those things that we use to protect our own vulnerability. It teaches to speak our own truth honestly and listen honestly to the truths of others. And as we, our whole community, begin to understand and incorporate these principles, we will become kinder, gentler, more helpful, and more hopeful people. It will allow us to allow us a tool to take our faith in the teachings of Jesus to an even wider community. And the third piece of the Christless language and learning community will be programming, social opportunities, and other support for LGBTQ children and youth. Again, think of it as out youth, unleashed, and for younger kids. Nicole Romero Pache is beginning to make connections with LGBTQ organizations, PTAs, community and schools coordinators, specifically those involved with the Welcoming Schools Project, with Gay Straight Alliance sponsors and more to bring together LGBTQ kids and their parents and other adults to provide them a safe, affirming, friendly place to grow. To move beyond the cocoon of isolation, shame, confusion, whatever may be holding them back, to turn into the butterflies that we know they can be. When we first floated the idea at a board meeting a couple of months ago, what you told us over and over is, I wish there had been a place like that for me. It's not quite a school yet, but that peace is going to grow. There are so many of you who have already thrown your support and effort into our learning community. Several of you have attended meetings and offered ideas. Cindy Stocking is working on paperwork for us. My friend Ellis, who many of you know, who has created nonprofit and for-profit enterprises, is creating a business plan. We have other people who are signed up for administrative tasks and for teaching. And I just have to pause a moment to say a special thank you to our board of directors, who hasn't backed down yet from any big idea I've thrown at them. Though I believe they must occasionally take very deep breaths and roll their eyes and lean on one another for support as Pastor throws out another big idea. For some of you, this announcement that you're hearing today will live up to the hype. It's big news. It's great news. It's I want to be part of it news. And some of you will be anxious because this is big and we could fail. And what if this and what if that? I have to tell you a quick story as I wind this down. As I prepared my sermon, I used the find command in the Word program to search for something I'd written earlier in the week. What I'd written earlier had the word if in it, and I couldn't find it among all my other notes, so I searched for the word if. It showed up 27 times in 10 pages, but get this, it only showed up 3 times as the word if. It showed up 19 times in the middle of life. We're taking a big chance. What if? But we're doing it together. Just like we became the first gay-affirming church in Austin, just like when we bought 10 acres of land in South Austin, when people were so afraid of gay that we had to change our name so the realtors would work with us. Just like when we built the first sanctuary and built the second. Do not be afraid. God said, do not be afraid. For I know the plans I have for you. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future. And I want to add to that so that you may give others a hope and a future. Amen.